Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Dirt. I want to thank you for taking some time out to listen to the podcast of our show, brought to you by Les Schwab Tires, doing the right thing since 1952.
Bad brackets are easily explained.
Offensive rebound, Stone, here's Allen from the tie. No! And it's over! Texas Tech has survived!
This is a Final 16-week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants. Two locations, 2454 East Burnside or 52nd and Woodstock.
Dirt and Sprague on 1080.
It was a fun chess match to be involved in.
The Fan.
Let's do this. Final hour. Dirt and Sprague here on The Fan. Thanks for being with us. It's rainy, cloudy Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday, though, so we all got that going for us. Coming up in 10 minutes, Russ' bag of plums. What do we got going on in that side? Inside that thing. In that bag. What's in your bag, man? Russ' bag of plums coming up in 10 minutes from
now. I enjoyed how you just made yourself laugh and smile so much.
You like that?
You kept saying it. Nobody's chiming in. Looking down.
I just kept going, man. Going.
Hey, if you're not going to laugh at your own jokes, who else will?
I think I'm the funniest person on the planet, man. Talk some more NBA. Take a look at the scoreboard watch, tournament stuff. Lots still to get to in the final hour of the show. By the way, Russ, I believe, found this. We have a fun fact on today's tournament action for you. When we get back into tournament talk.
All right.
So I'll save that for that segment. There is an NFL team for sale. They are the Carolina Panthers. If you remember Jerry Richardson, their owner, he's kind of a creep, walking around, doing jeans day to look at people's bodies.
Hashtag me too, yeah.
He's a bit of a weirdo. So he is out, and he is selling the franchise. And according to Bloomberg, who reported yesterday, the Panthers has reached a record $2.5 billion in terms of those are the offers being made. If you're wondering, the record for a professional sports franchise sale in the United States was the Rockets in 2017 and sold for $2.2 billion. So this is clearly on path to become the most expensive franchise sold in the history of American sports. And one of the main candidates to purchase the team is Michael Rubin, who is the Fanatics owner. He is not apparently willing to go that high, and the reason I bring him up is he was reportedly the one that was tied in potentially with Sean P. Diddy Combs and Stephen Curry, who might be minority partners with him, although nothing has been made clear whether or not they were actually partners in the first place. But he says $2.5 billion, that's a little too rich for his blood. He's not on board with that.
Yeah, you just wonder where this number is going to go. Do you think it's going to get $3 billion? I don't.
It's heading in that. So Forbes' evaluation of the franchise, I believe last year, had them at $2.3 billion was the evaluation of them.
The thing with sports, and I'm going to be interested to see where this goes in the future, but the thing with sports franchises, it's an exclusive club. So you get that access. They're never going to be worth these prices again, especially football. Why do we think in 20 years the Carolina Panthers are going to be worth $3 billion if you want to sell them? They're not. So you just keep.
So you think the franchise valuation is going to go down?
I think in football they're not going to. Yeah,
wow.
I'm not much, but dude, we're talking about football, right? Where we continue to point out the ratings decline. The NBA, the MLB, at times depending on the matchups, those are two leagues that ratings are doing just fine.
They're still nowhere near the same conversation as the NFL.
They're not, but they're also dropping pretty significantly for the NFL's liking. You spend $3 billion on the Carolina Panthers. Is somebody going to buy it for four in 20 years? I have a hard time believing that.
Yeah, it's tough to say because you could have made the argument about maybe the Panthers when Richardson brought him in as an expansion team. You know, who knows what people thought about evaluations back then. There are people, for example, one of the guys that's bidding on them, is a guy, what is his name? Salisbury is his last name. And James... he is the founder of a software company. He's worth $10 billion, and he's one of the people that's made a bid. So you're getting these kind of folks that are throwing this coin out.
If you had 10, would you put 3 in?
I'd think about it if I was from the area and I was a fan of the team and I wanted to own a sports franchise and I had $10 billion laying around. You get a couple other minority owners to help you out a little bit and pitch in. Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with that. I see what you're saying about the direction of the league, and I totally get that because there's no doubt the ratings are going down. I also do think it's important to note how big that gap still is. And if right. you're going to get the rest of the people to continue to stop watching football, like there's a chunk of folks who don't watch or boycott or whatever, and that's in streaming issues. There's a whole bunch of reasons why the ratings are down. But revenue is still there for the league. They make far more than any of the other leagues. The TV deals, the TV money is going to continue to go up. Despite the ratings going down, look at the new Thursday Night Football deal that Fox just signed. They're getting way more than they got under the last deal. So they're not concerned about the ratings going down. And when you look at the TV numbers of like the top 20 watched events every year, like 17 of them are always NFL right. games.
But take what I'm saying, though. Look at the Houston Rockets, who just sold recently. That last owner, I think it was a Leslie guy, he bought them for like $88 million? He sold them for, I want to say it was over $2 billion. That is a turnaround you're not going to see again. You're not going to see that. If you want to just be an NFL owner, an NBA owner, great. You paid your way into that exclusive club. I'm just saying on the turnaround factor, I cannot see a time where the Carolina Panthers are worth $4 billion. So if you buy them for three, hypothetically, we'll see what they go for. You buy them for three, I don't think you're going to get that kind of margin anymore that you are right now. I think this is the highest point it's going to get.
And I disagree with that. I think
so
it's
you think
keep
somebody's
going
to buy it for three, and you think it's going to keep going up to be worth four in 20 years.
If franchises went from where they were 15 years ago to where they were now, why can't they continue to go up?
Because frontline documentaries and movies weren't made.
Yeah, that's, I mean, look.
In the NFL's regard.
That's Yeah, it's a bad look, but how many people watched the Super Bowl last year?
Well, less than the year before.
Yeah.
No, I'm not.
It's still like the third most watched event in TV history.
Ratings almost don't matter to me. I'm just simply pointing out, I don't think football is ever going to get bigger. Therefore, I don't think these franchise valuations are ever going to go higher than they are right now.
See, and I'll listen to that argument. I think I'm with you on
that's what
the
I mean,
TV
though.
Numbers potentially, but to me, that doesn't mean that revenue can't continue to
go
up.
No, revenue is going to be fine. And you mentioned the Fox deal they just got for Thursday night. I'm just saying if a guy buys the Panthers for three, I don't think he's ever going to sell them for four. He's either going to break even or he will be under $3 billion. Just like in the NBA, I think a sport that can rise up at some point and come a little closer, I think you're going to see something somewhat similar. It may go up a little more, but it's not going to go much higher. Like, we're going to talk about these franchise entities getting to $5, $6, $7 billion at one point. See, I can never see that happening.
The tough part is if we hosted a radio show 15 years ago, we could have probably said the same thing. That team just sold for $600 million. Is it ever going to be more than that? It seemed just sold for $1 billion. Is it ever going to be worth two?
Right. The Rockets guy bought it for under $200 million. Maybe you're right on that. I don't know if I would have ever seen $2 billion for the Clippers. I would have laughed at that, and I still can't believe that happened.
Right.
But I just, with football specifically, I have a hard time believing one of those teams is going to go for four. It's mainly just the Carolina Panthers. The Cowboys could go for four.
Oh, I think if you sold the Cowboys now, they might even go for five.
Maybe they do.
Six, seven, eight,
maybe
nine.
Maybe they do. Maybe they do. But
yeah, people are saying, somebody said, if it's okay if you don't make $4 billion selling in 10 years, you're going to make money hand over fist for the next 10 years. So even if you sell at $3 billion, you're still ahead. Another one, you're too cheap. Somebody's saying that. It'll be worth tons more with inflation if it keeps rising, revenue rising.
Well, we'll see about that. That's I'm talking 20 years. I'm not talking 3 years from now. We'll see where it's at in 20 years.
Okay.
Assuming that ownership group is still there in 20 years.
And you're buying into the doom and gloom a little bit of the NFL.
No, I'm not buying. It's not a doom and gloom. It's just simply saying there's got to be a cap to this. You think this is just going to keep going up and up and up and up? We're going to get to $10 billion. Someone's going to pay $10 billion for a franchise.
If there's people with that much money to spend, yeah.
They're not going to hit that kind of revenue for that to be worth it. And by the way, the cheap note, if I had the money, I'd buy an NBA team yesterday. I'd spend billions on an NBA team. One, because I love the NBA. And two, being in that club is pretty kick-ass. That, to me, this is a big D-swinging contest for a lot of these guys. Of you have 30 people in a room that can say they have something everybody in the country wants, and you get to be one of those 30, people pay a premium for that price.
Yeah. Then you get pretty good seats, too.
You can sit wherever the hell you want.
Not bad.
Pick whatever courtside seat you want, man.
Courtside.
So the bidding on the Panthers has reportedly reached $2.5 billion, Bloomberg reported, and the estimation that was given by Forbes last year was $2.3 billion. So far, pretty close. Michael Rubin is probably the most known bidder, the Fanatics owner, and he is not willing to go that high. So nobody can tell how high he's willing to go. But yeah, interesting stuff. We'll see how far this goes. We know Richardson's selling. He's getting forced out because, well, the guy's a creep. So we'll see how far this goes. I'll be interested to see what the final number is if it reaches $3 billion, because right now it's at 2.5, and maybe it keeps going up, maybe it doesn't. Maybe that's where the sale ends up happening.
By the way, the Dallas Cowboys, number one in the NFL in revenue last year, $700 million.
Well, that's the listener's point. Like, even if you can't, even if you don't sell it for $4 billion.
That's the Cowboys, though.
Sure, but how much revenue did the Panthers generate?
I'm looking it up.
It's not $700 million, but I'm sure they turned a decent profit.
They're not even top 10.
Okay.
Give me a minute. Okay. Yeah, give me a minute.
Okay. Sorry. Well, we'll update you on the other side on that one, see what the revenue was for the Panthers. Also, coming up next, we'll take a look inside Russ' bag of plums. What has he got for us on this Thursday? We'll find out next on The Fan.
This is a Final 16 Week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
On 1080 The Fan.
Yeah, fun little back and forth with some listeners about NFL teams. Are they worth it? Are the evaluations going to go up? Or is this it? Have we hit the ceiling on what they're worth?
I don't think we've hit the ceiling yet, because I think you got a ton of franchises that at some point will sell. And again, my point is not to say this is topping out, but what's the number that it will top out at? The Cowboys go for $5 billion. I'm not going to bat an eye. That won't shock me at all. And, you know, somebody texting in, you want net revenue, et cetera. So all I was able to find here in the break was 2016, $78 million in operating profit for the Panthers, $325 million in revenue.
Okay.
So you just got to be able to, all right, where you're going from that number, and then where's it at? And I'm not even saying this because the new ownership group wants to make a $1 billion profit. They could own this franchise for the rest of their lives and pass it through their family, etc.
A lot of people don't. A lot of people don't buy NFL teams or sports teams just simply to sell it and make money. A lot of people do it for the fandom of it.
Exactly. How many teams have been for sale the last few years?
Yeah, I mean, there's some terrible owners that are that way. But for the most part, yeah, it's a family thing. Paul Allen's not like a lot of it is him. It's just he loves sports. He's passionate about it. He bought the Blazers and the Seahawks. He built the building here.
He bought the Seahawks out of a favor.
Right. I was like, all right, sure, yeah, I'll buy the Seahawks. So, yeah, I think it's important to keep that in mind, too. And if you're making, what was it, $78 million in profit?
That's operating profit.
Operating profit. Yeah. It's not bad. Not a bad business to own.
You love sports. You do. My whole point was just simply, if I could do it, I would do it.
You just don't think you don't think this is going to keep going up for the NFL. You think it'll come back down to earth.
A handful of teams get you higher than that, and I think the rest of it.
This is a good old takes exposed. If we're still hosting a show in like 25 years,
I don't know if I want to be hosting a show in 25 years with you.
You know what? It'd be like 60, still doing this thing, huh? Hair, chest hair flying out of the shirt.
I feel like you may be bald and I'll be ugly, and this is not going to be what it once was.
Welcome back here. Well, what do you think?
Well, the older listeners will still be kicking, and the geriatric comes. Remember when you said they were capped out, Sprague? You were wrong.
I'm going to remember this.
Remember this forever?
In 30 years, I'm going to tweet you when an NFL team sells for $10 billion.
I feel like Jeff Rust is going to be on an island somewhere texting, hey, remember, you idiots, when you said it was going to be capped?
He said nobody wanted to buy teams anymore.
The good thing for me is I know I'll be at a point where I'll go, I don't remember that.
No, I don't care.
And bring the audio back.
All right, Russ, let's take a look inside your bag of plums, shall we? Jeff Russ did this last Thursday. They were phenomenal, and there's nowhere to go but down, but we'll see if he can go up. Jeff
Thanks
Russ.
Thanks for the vote of confidence.
Where are we going today, man?
Let's see. I like to start off with some national days. Today is National Goof Off Day, so perfect for you two.
Perfect.
It is also National West Virginia Day.
What? They have their own day?
Well, yeah, that tomorrow should be West Virginia Day. They got Nova.
There's lots of jokes that probably aren't too radio friendly on that one, but
no, I've driven through West Virginia.
Have you?
I have.
I've never been to the fine state of West Virginia.
Picture in your mind what you think West Virginia looks like.
Okay.
That's what it looks like.
Yeah. Mount Hood with cannibals coming down.
That's what it looks like.
Tomorrow, National Chip and Dip Day.
There's gotta be beautiful parts of West Virginia. Come on. Every state has something beautiful.
You know what state that's kind of like that?
What?
Arkansas.
Arkansas?
Arkansas. There's some beautiful places in Arkansas.
Tomorrow, National Chip and Dip Day. It's also National Near Miss Day. I think we've all got a couple of those we'd rather not talk about.
Near what?
Near miss.
Near miss?
Yes. Saturday is National Chocolate-Covered Raisin Day, or as parents of small children know it, is it chocolate or poop?
Do you like chocolate-covered raisins?
No,
Raisinettes, the movies?
Oh, I'm a big Raisinette fan.
Are you?
That was my candy of choice at the movies as a kid.
Yeah.
That or a Kit Kat. Yeah. Monday, National Spinach Day and National Nougat Day.
Mm.
Yes, I know which one I'll be observing.
Do you split up your Kit Kats?
Yes. I'm not a monster.
Yeah.
So it's funny because
those people.
This happened yesterday. We had a couple promotions ladies ask for a snack, and Dirk goes, "Hey, I got a string cheese.
Yeah.
They go, "Yeah, we'll take that." So he hands it to them, and they're just pulling. It looks like dental floss. They're pulling it apart, and
they went that thin with the strands.
Man.
And Dirk's like, "What are you doing? Just eat it." And they're just like, "What are you talking about?" He's like, "I just peel it down and I just bite into it."
You probably just eat the hot dogs cold straight out of the package too, don't you?
No, I do not do that. But I do eat hot dogs plain.
And then I asked Dirt, "Hey, how do you eat a Kit Kat?" Because they're like, "You're supposed to string the cheese off. That's why it's called that."
Or Twix. Do you do left or right Twix, or you just eat the Twix?
No, I mean, you have to do those one by one.
No, you
they're not connected.
Hold my beer.
Oh, yeah, touche.
Connect, yeah. Kit Kat's connected.
Touche.
And they said they pull them apart, and Dirk's like, "I just bite into it.
You just eat it."
And Wednesday, National Something on a Stick Day. Again, jokes probably not appropriate for radio.
All the great foods come on sticks.
I'm just glad that you, I'm just glad that you pointed out what tomorrow's going to be, and that's National What's Better Than Popcorn as a Snack Day, Chip and Dip Day.
Chip and Dip, there we go. Yeah. So airlines these days have no shortage of ways to divide and categorize passengers, but most of those ways involve how much money a customer spends with them. Now, Thai Airways International is evaluating passengers based on their waist size. They announced a 56-inch waistline limit for passengers sitting in business class on its Boeing 787-9 aircraft.
Huh.
The airline said it introduced the limit due to seatbelt airbags it installed to prevent the seatbelts from being extended. And the seatbelt airbags will also prevent parents from flying with children on their laps. Thai Airways, not the first airline to classify passengers according to their size or weight. In November, European airline Finnair started a program where it encouraged passengers to weigh themselves and their luggage before boarding. The voluntary program was designed to give the airline a better sense of the amount of weight its flights would carry. In 2016, Hawaiian Airlines announced a policy that would prevent passengers flying from American Samoa to Honolulu from pre-selecting seats before flights in an effort to optimize weight distribution. The policy was controversial because weight is a sensitive issue and American Samoa has a high obesity rate.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And the now defunct Samoa Air took things a step further in 2013 by setting ticket prices for passengers based on their weight and the weight of their carry-ons. The airline claimed it was the quote-unquote fairest way to assign ticket prices. So what's worse? Sitting next to somebody taking up your space in an airline seat or somebody who stinks?
Oh, it stinks. Why do I want to be on a flight with somebody that stinks? I can deal with space. I'm skinny.
Yeah, see, I just I disagree with that.
You're a little more wider than me. What's your pant size?
I fill out the seat.
What's your pant size? What's your belt?
36.
That's not bad.
I'm a 36, yeah.
I'm a 30. It's not bad.
Holy hell, eat a sandwich, dude.
Jesus.
Good Lord.
Eat a steak. God, what is wrong with you?
Bro, it's like three pant sizes. It's not that big a difference.
I think the last time I was a 30-inch waist size, I was probably about 12.
You had 30? Jesus.
Nice,
shop at the Baby Gap? God. What's yours, Russ?
I too am a 36. I just kind of spill out over the top a bit.
Yeah.
I'm muffin. I'm built like an apple on a stick, basically.
I was a 36 in college.
That's because you sagged.
I sagged a little bit, but I actually was a lot bigger. I weighed like 24 pounds more in college than I do now.
The hell happened to you, man? You got a venereal disease?
I stopped eating waffles with peanut butter and 9 sausage links.
It's got a tapeworm in there.
You jerks.
Don't body shame me right now. You're body shaming me.
You know what?
We get people all the time. Think fat people are the only one that get body shamed. Meanwhile, skinny people.
Oh, yeah. Cry me a river.
I feel so bad for you and your metabolism.
Cry me a river.
You know what my...
dumping four times a day.
My cousin said to me a couple weeks ago when I went and visited, careful, Sprague, you'll blow away.
Oh, man.
Screw you.
Well, stop eating almonds.
My bad for being healthy.
So a 6-year-old from Bend recently made an interesting discovery. She became bored during her sister's JV soccer game and decided to play in the dirt. She happened across a rock with swirls that reminded her of the rock from Moana. It turns out it was a 65-million-year-old fossil called an ammonite.
What?
Which is a sea creature that went extinct millions of years ago.
I saw this story. This was cool.
And ammonite fossils themselves are not terribly rare, but they're not common in the Bend area in central Oregon. But in some cases, they have fetched somewhere between $40,000 and $50,000.
Oh.
Director of Paleontological Collections at University of Oregon said that because so little is known about this particular find, it is not scientifically significant. So just, I guess, a cool little...
That's kick ass. You sell that immediately, by the way.
You can't make anything on it.
Right? Yeah. Well, you can try, but yeah, she might get a dime. And then a Cleveland mom battling the flu reportedly needed to get a liver transplant because of the at-home remedies that she used. Stephanie Soriano said she unknowingly poisoned herself with her regimen of over-the-counter drugs to beat the illness in January. This according to WJW. She said, quote, I was taking Tylenol during the day and towards the evening as well. At nighttime, so I could sleep, I took NyQuil. Then I would wake up around 2 to 3 in the morning and take Theraflu as well. But days later, her health was seemingly worse as she was rushed to University Hospital's Cleveland Medical Center. She was going in and out of consciousness, she told the news station. Doctors determined she ingested too much acetaminophen, an ingredient in all three of her medications, which was causing damage to her liver. She was told that she would need a liver transplant to save her life. They told us all the worst-case scenarios about it could be months. May not be able to find a match. Fortunately, however, she was only on the transplant list for about a day before they found a match. And the FDA advises taking no more than 3,000 milligrams of acetaminophen per day. So, you know, make sure you know what your active ingredients are.
Yeah, that's one of the things I am a little naturalistic on is medicine stuff. Like, I have to be really, really sick to take something. I don't like taking ibuprofen. I don't like taking Advil. I don't like taking Tylenol.
Even headache stuff?
It has to be like as extreme as I can't handle it to take it. I don't know why. It stuff just kind of creeps me out. I'm the same way. I never do.
Because you don't know what that stuff is.
I never take NyQuil. I will only do Theraflu if I'm like as sick as a dog and I can't move and it helps me fall asleep. But I don't know. I have a phobia of taking that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'll take those, and I make sure, I stagger them between the, you know, whatever cold medicine that has acetaminophen, and a couple hours later, take the Advil and stagger them. But, yeah, make sure you're not doing too much Tylenol, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, it's tricky, but, you know, I was watching a mountain man show, these people that live in the middle of nowhere, and it's this small little guy wearing furs, and he's like, I got to get ready for the winter. And he walks... like 15 miles to meet some other hobbit. And this guy, just like, they go together in the woods and they find all these natural remedies because he's got a lung problem.
Mm.
But he won't go into a town because he doesn't like people. So this guy just puts all these plants into a jar with water, mixes it up. He's like, just take a teaspoon of this a day. You'll be all right. He's like, this is why we're friends.
He probably figured it all out.
He's probably going to, they're going to find him dead.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a little extreme. You know, you got to go to a doctor occasionally. Somebody asked that. What do I do after a night of long drinking? Yeah, greasy food and a Gatorade.
Yeah.
I don't
usually take any medication.
Yeah, you
for
wake
that.
Up the next day, you get something greasy for breakfast, you pound a Gatorade, you'll be all right.
When I went back to school to finish my degree, I did for my public speaking class, I did an informative speech on the prevention and cure of hangovers. And one of the things I found that apparently saltines and honey are very good for alleviating hangover symptoms.
Okay.
The honey is very highly concentrated in fructose, which helps break down all the leftover alcohol sugars.
So does a double bacon cheeseburger.
Double bacon cheese. That sounds good to me. appreciate the jokes, people. All right. Good. That was a good bag of plums, Russ. That was solid. You went up from last week. I didn't think you could. You got even better from that. That was good.
Plums got bigger, buddy.
They got big plums over there, man. Big plums.
They all swollen.
Big old plums. Hey, this has never happened in the NCAA tournament. Something happening today. It's never happened before. And I think it backs up my argument. But first, here's Russ with SportsCenter.
I know you want to leave me, but I refuse. to let you go. If I have to beg, plead for your sympathy, I don't mind, 'cause you mean that much to me.
This is a final 16-week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
On 1080 The Fan.
Hey, 239. Take a look at the NBA slate. Scoreboard watch for you. Got an NFL note, too, for the final segment of the show I want to get to. But I saw this from our wonderful Twitter account, at 1080 The Fan. You should go follow our station because we've got all sorts of great gems out there. So they quote tweeted ESPN Stats and Info, said this: since seeding began in 1979, Thursday, that is today, will be the 79th day on which Sweet 16 games have been played in the men's tournament. This is the first of those 79 days there has not been a single number one seed in action. This is the first time in the NCAA tournament. Oh,
it doesn't help when you have a 16 seed beat a 1 seed who then can't play the 9 seed, and then the 9 seed goes and plays against Kentucky.
Yeah, that hurts you a little bit. That hurts you.
Can I say the most proud I am of my absolutely busted bracket? I'm actually proud that Virginia lost early because I had Arizona beating them in this round. I didn't have them pass the Sweet 16. So I never liked Virginia to begin with going very far in this tournament.
You
I know. Hey, I'm not hiding from that. We played it Monday.
Okay.
Not hiding from it. I'm just saying, I think of everything this tournament has given me, which is not much, West Virginia's look good, and we'll see how they do against UVA or Villanova. And I did not have Virginia going far, so at least they got knocked out.
Yeah, today you have no number one seeds, no number two seeds playing. The highest seed is Michigan at 3, and then you got Gonzaga's a 4 seed, Kentucky's a 5 seed, and then you get a 7-11.
Why do you think, because you tease it, that kind of shows what you're talking about. Why does that matter, though? They would play an 8 or 9 seed.
Oh, I know that, but what day is more exciting, today or tomorrow?
Well, tomorrow, but
does having two number one seeds play help tomorrow?
Would Virginia playing today help?
Yeah, I think it would have a little bit. They were the number one overall seed in the tournament. Yeah, we wouldn't have had this same.
But you and I both know they're boring.
It doesn't change the fact that they're boring. I get that. But tomorrow, if you didn't have West Virginia, Villanova, who did Villanova beat in the second round? If you had that team versus West Virginia, would you be as excited for that game as you are as Villanova versus West Virginia?
Probably not.
But
Villanova's
right?
a fun team to watch.
Kansas loses to insert whatever 8-9 matchup that was.
Sure.
And that team, the 9 seed's playing Clemson tomorrow.
Yeah.
Not quite as the same level of excitement. Like, this is what I've always said about the tournament.
But having the higher seed, or lower, I guess, in this case, doesn't always mean you're getting the better matchup.
No, but Auburn, you are getting the better team.
Well, if Auburn beats Clemson, that's the seed-on-seed better matchup, but Clemson beat Auburn, and they smoked them.
They did, yeah, they smoked. Look, this is what I've always said about the tournament is we love upsets, and we love Cinderella stories only to a certain point. It's great on the first 2 days of the tournament.
This is about the point, though.
This is it, and I think that's the tough part of some of these is you are going to have, in three of these matchups, either a 4 seed or higher advance to the Elite Eight. There's a chance today that you could have 2 number 9 seeds and an 11 seed going to the Elite Eight. And that's where I think it hits the wall for some people. I know maybe I'm a little more extreme than others, but if Florida State beats Gonzaga, you have a 9 seed in the Elite Eight. If Kansas State beats Kentucky, you have a 9 seed in the Elite Eight. And Loyola Chicago could easily beat Nevada tonight, and you can have an 11 seed in the Elite Eight. There's three of your 8 teams punching their tickets potentially tonight. That's not including if Texas A&M wins. So if you get the lower seeds winning the 4 games tonight, that's 2 9s, a 7, and an 11. There's half of your Elite Eight field.
But at what point do you eliminate the seed and recognize the school? Like, if I say Cinderella, does Texas A&M qualify for you?
No, not quite.
Okay. But they're a 7 seed. They may win
right.
tonight.
They could. They very well could. They blew out North Carolina, and they look great doing it.
Is Florida State a Cinderella to you?
No, they're not, because they're in the ACC.
They could be a 9 seed in the Elite Eight, defeating the national championship Gonzaga team.
They could. Yeah, I think that's the interesting difference this year, just with the chaos that we've seen, not having a one or two seed play on the first day of the Sweet 16. That kind of sums it up. Now, granted, it should be pointed out, you don't have this same problem tomorrow. I mean, tomorrow you have two number one seeds playing, and you have two seeds
tomorrow
playing.
Tomorrow is perfect. I mean, there's no bad matchups.
Yeah, you have the chance for an 11 seed Syracuse to go on a run. Maybe some one seeds could get upset, but you have some blue bloods left on the other side, teams that have been around the best in college basketball all year. And that's the difference that you could get today. It would be really interesting to see if you get the higher seeds that win tonight.
You know, I know what you're saying, and I know there's a ton of people that agree with you, and to an extent, I agree with you. But when you think back of memories of the tournament, this is why I think this argument gets way overblown, right? Colin does this a lot. He does this almost every year. We don't want to see the upsets to the Final Four. Yes and no. Butler, their back-to-back years were amazing. The VCU story, George Mason, you could go the upset of Houston. I mean, we can point to a lot of big upsets that happened.
Those are the ones you remember those a lot.
You remember those more.
You do.
You still remember George Mason. Do you remember anybody else in that tournament?
No, I don't.
Do you remember who won that year?
No, I have no clue what year that was.
That's what I'm saying, though, is like I see what you're saying, and it's not that I necessarily always disagree, but
right.
Seeing a Loyola Chicago go to the Final Four, for example, we can go, oh, it's not this team or that team. But we'll remember that because that was so unexpected and nobody predicted it.
There's no doubt about that. And I think Butler is a unique case because they've backed it up as a program. Like, well, they made it back to the national championship the next year, and they've turned into one of the better programs in college basketball. George Mason, correct me if I'm wrong, hasn't done squat since then. To anybody's knowledge, not right. VCU turned into a nice little program.
But then Shaka Smart left.
Their coach left. Yeah. And I don't know what the hell VCU's doing now. I haven't heard them since they played Oregon State. So I get that point. Like, we do remember the Cinderella story. I think that's where today is kind of on steroids for me, is that it's not a good mix-up. Like, if you have a Loyola Chicago taking on Duke tonight, cool.
Or Gonzaga,
right? Like, that to me is a fun matchup to see what they can do, but instead it's an 11 versus a 7. We'll talk some more about these games. Gonzaga fans are begging Sprague to not pick Gonzaga, so I'm going to make you pick the Gonzaga-Florida State game in the final segment of the show. An NFL note for you, and we will scoreboard watch coming up next on The Fan. The hip, you don't stop. Rock it out, baby, rubber to the boogity, bang, bang, the boogie to the boogity beat. Now what you hear is not a test, I'm rapping to the beat.
This is a Final 16-week edition of Dirt and Sprague.
Brought to you by the 808, the titan of Hawaiian restaurants.
On 1080 The Fan.
Gonzaga fan begging with me, don't make Sprague pick that game.
What are we going to do?
Oh, we're going to pick the game.
Oh, we are?
Yeah, you're going to pick the game.
What happened to me not picking because of the Blazer game? I didn't pick that game.
That was because everybody that listens to our show predominantly is a Blazer fan, and I didn't want to let everybody down in that regard. This one, we need to put the reverse jinx to the test.
Okay.
So you had a rough Friday last Friday.
I did.
You took Virginia to cover the spread, and they lost the first one seed to ever lose, and they lost by 20.
So very fair to say no on this, and I get it because I almost want to say this myself. If I pick them and they win, does that silence...
It lessens the reverse jinx. It lessens it.
Because that was a 16 over a 1,
sure.
For God's sake.
Well, and let's also not forget that on Thursday you gambled on Arizona to cover the spread against Buffalo.
I was 2-1 that day. Come on.
Yeah.
If I was in Vegas, I would have won money.
Sizable upset.
I still would have won money. Just want to point that out.
We people don't remember the ones you get right. They only remember the ones you get wrong.
That's true.
So let's give a quick thought. Gonzaga currently is a 6-point favorite over Florida State.
You want me to go spread?
I want you to go spread pick.
I actually think Gonzaga, who really struggled, is ultimately going to win this game going away. I don't trust Leonard Hamilton, and I think they've got it figured out. They did struggle against Ohio State. They struggled in their first game, UNC Greensboro. I think the Zags have it figured out. I like Mark Few's crew here. I think it's a good matchup for him. I'm going to take the Zags.
I told the Zag fan, if they can overcome the Sprague reverse jinx, this could be their year.
It could be,
right?
Maybe.
If you can overcome the Sprague reverse jinx, this could be the Zags' year. So you're going with the Zags.
I have a hard time trusting Florida State in the tournament.
Sure. Yeah. Seen him play like twice this year. So no hot takes there. Not going to give you one. Hey, Frank Gore coming back to the NFL. I love this story. So he's been around forever. One of the best running backs in the history of the league. He has signed close to his college home He's going to play for the Dolphins. A one-year deal in Miami.
Yeah.
I love that.
He is never going to retire, is he? Nah,
he's going to play until he's 50.
He hasn't missed a game in like seven straight seasons
and
or something.
And he's still productive.
He went bad last year.
he's not.
You can find worse running backs out there.
He's not peak Frank Gore. He's better than Eddie Lacy.
Nobody has had a bigger turnaround in their sports life than him. Of tearing his both ACLs in college and then having this NFL career.
Yeah.
Where he's going to finish, I believe he's going to finish top five rushing all time. I might be wrong on that, so forgive me. Text police can help on that one. But I know he's at that mark where he's a surefire first ballot Hall of Famer. And he's going to go down as one of my favorite NFL players of all time. I love Frank Gore. He's always been underappreciated.
Joke's on you, but he already is top five.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. All right.
He is...
How far away is he from four or three?
80 yards away from Curtis Martin.
For four?
For four.
So he'll be four.
Barry Sanders is three, and he needs about 1,200 yards for that one. So that, unless he plays 2 years.
He'll be four. All time. Frank Gore.
If he plays 2 years, he could get past Barry Sanders. And then Peyton's about 2,000 yards ahead of him. He's not going to catch Emmitt Smith.
Two craziest running back stats. Frank Gore will be fourth all time in rushing. And Myles Gaskin is going to be the all-time Washington Huskies rushing leader.
Yeah, that blew my mind a little bit, too.
The most diehard Husky fan. If I said Myles Gaskin as the best running back Husky history, you would never pick him.
Wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't pick him.
Yeah. Hey, quick scoreboard. Watching the NBA tonight. The only team that's close to Portland is that's playing to the Jazz are in action tonight. But they're four back of Portland. New Orleans in action. They are at home against the Lakers.
Ooh,
so there's one to keep your eye on right now. New Orleans is currently 2.5 games behind the Blazers. There you go. Good little show. If you missed any of it, Les Schwab Tires Podcast, 1080thefan.com is where you can find it, at 1080thefan, at Dirt and Sprague. We'll tweet it out. We had Mark Schlabach on, ESPN columnist. Great stuff from him on college football and Arizona. We will talk to you tomorrow at noon. Enjoy the Sweet 16, everybody. Number one is next. You're listening to 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.